Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson. I'm your host, and with me are my dear friends and co-hosts, Andre Rodeus, Chuck Thurston, and Marvin Garin. Hi, you guys.
Hey, Paula.
Hey, Paul. Hi, you guys. Good morning, Paula.
Hi, yeah.
Good morning, Chuck. Good morning. Marvin.
Good morning, all.
Well, hi, Andre, Chuck. And also greetings to all the folks that listen to us currently and during the week. Welcome, welcome.
Yeah, welcome. It's always so good to get your feedback and, you know, come to find out that you're listening to the show, because we don't know necessarily. We have statistics that show that people listen on the podcast, but we don't know who all you are. So God bless you. Hope you enjoy it. We sure do. And we had a wonderful study last week on resurrection and life after death, and it just so happens that one of our dear friends and longtime listeners, Ms. Arvilla Weldon, was always on the call, and she actually listened to that whole show last week, which I thought was a very good show, and just we had a great conversation about resurrection and the afterlife. And it turns out that our sweet dear friend Arvilla graduated just 2 days later. And you guys have heard her on the phone. She's called in. Well, she calls in every week, and oftentimes she'll press the one key and raise her hand, which means that she would like to say something. And so we've always been delighted to hear from Arvilla. And Arvilla was an amazing human being. She jumped into studying the Urantia book rather late in life, but she did it with her whole heart. And she loved the Cosmic Citizen, listened every week faithfully, and she also loved UUI and UUI courses. And she tapped into the cafe at UUI every chance she got, and so we sure will miss Arvilla. And Godspeed, sweet Arvilla. You know,
I have this recollection, Paul, of Arvilla's. She always had a smile on her face, and when she would come into the cafes, you would see her. And she, you know, she didn't speak very often. When she did, she spoke with a a full heart about her experiences in life, and she had some really hard experiences, you know, as many of us do. She was, I think, I'm going to say 95, 96 years of age, way up there at the top of the range, and she lived in a retirement community, and she, I was saying before the program, she was so persistent when she first got on, she was having technical difficulties because, you know, I mean, for someone who in a retirement home at 96, you know, Zoom was new for all of us, but for her, it was like otherworldly. And she was having some difficulties, but she persisted. You know, she had staff members that really loved her and supported her. She persisted until she finally got all the wrinkles ironed out, and then she was like such a regular participant in the cafes and many courses. And I always remember her smiling face. She'd always be looking and nodding. And I think her life. I think this was. The engagement in the Yamanashi community was probably, along with her, I think she had a devoted daughter, along with her family members. Yeah, I think this was the key part of her life. I think that's why she got up in the morning. She said as much at some points that this was her immersion in her Yamanashi family was life for her. That was what she got up for and lived for. She was just a jewel and is a jewel, and when we all look forward to reconnecting with her on the Mansion Worlds. What a wonderful human being.
What a wonderful life she lived, too. She had a great marriage and beautiful children. In fact, I started talking to our villa long before I ever met her. She would call the fellowship and ask questions. And she lived, you know, even as an elderly person in Alamosa, and she would have questions about study aids and different things she might do to, you know, help her with her studies of the Urantia book. And she called me at one point, probably in 2016, and she said, "I'm coming to the conference in Denver, and my son is going to bring me." It was just such a delight to know, because I knew she was quite elderly even then. In 2017, she was close to 90 then, and I know how hard it must be to travel and go someplace like a conference and to a big, campus like DU's campus and try to navigate all of that. But her son was an absolute doll. He brought her, he stayed with her the whole time. He himself wasn't all that interested in the Urantia book, but he was totally devoted to his mom's experience and so wonderful and helpful. And it was just really touching to me to get to meet her in person, and then also to be able to know that she was able to attend that conference, which was something she really, really wanted to do. She's remarkable.
Yeah, you know.
Andre stopped to see her on his way to Canada, and I think you even mentioned that on air, didn't you, Andre? Or were you on your way back? Which was it?
No, I was on my way to Seattle, yeah. I was heading up for Thanksgiving. And it was November 21st. When we drove into Burley, Idaho, where she was staying over at her assisted living residence. And because COVID protocols were still well in place, we were only able to meet in the vestibule, not even in the lobby of the assisted living residence. So she was allowed to come out, and we were allowed to meet her there, basically in the entryway of the assisted living facility. And she and my son Michael and my daughter Ivana all met, and they went off to get dinner for us, since we hadn't had supper, and I got to visit for well over an hour with our villa. And it was great just at least being able to make close contact. And, you know, she was so appreciative of the movement. She was so appreciative of every aspect of what she was encountering in the Arantia movement. It was such good fellowship for her. And, you know, I'm just grateful that I had that opportunity. You know, I hemmed and hawed a little bit about, you know, was it, it was COVID, it was all kinds of things. Was I going to disrupt her routine? You know, was it going to work or whatever? But I called and she was just thrilled that somebody was dropping by, and especially from the show and from UUI, and she really appreciated everything from the Arantia movement. She loved the revelation. She knew what it was and would ask. I mean, she had the humility of someone who, when she didn't know something, she just simply asked. She was a lifelong mm-hmm. learner. A lot of people mm-hmm. don't know that she was a trained psychologist. You know, she was, mm-hmm. she had taught in her younger life. She'd done all kinds of things. She was a bright, mm-hmm. intelligent,
amazing,
perspicacious woman. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. You know, old age makes of us all you can't tell what we once were or ever had potential for, but you could see her on the Zoom calls, and she was constantly taking notes, and she was constantly paying attention. There was,
right.
She had a focus that I think would be the envy of a lot of 50-year-olds. Well, actually, it would be the envy of a lot of 20-year-olds these days. You know, she was focused. She had the ability to really pay attention. And I will miss her dearly. She was fun to be with.
You know, the thought of a number of other, I just read an article in the Fellowship's Mini Messenger, you know, that Mike McIsaac put together on some of the second generation readers who are really old now, and they're the last representatives of the pre-publication period of the forum. Larry Bowman, there were four of them, Larry Bowman,
John Hales.
Yeah, and
Sandy Powell.
What's the gal name? Sandy Powell.
And
who's the last one? I'm spacing now, but these are people who are really that generation is largely passed.
Oh, Jeff Bedell.
And they're the last. Jeff Bedell.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and, you know, see, these are folks that had their first experience with the Arantia Papers before the Arantia Papers were the Arantia book. And it's interesting, I was thinking, you know, we're talking about Arvilla. There's a small number of people who I would have considered elders in the Arantia movement who grew quite old and remained part of the culture and the movement pretty actively all the way up until the time they passed. I'm thinking of Clyde Bedell. I'm thinking of Julia Fenderson and Berkeley Elliott. You know, some of the great leaders in our movement who lived to an advanced age and remained part of the community. And what a rich experience I think it was for them and for us to have them with us continuously. Carolyn Kendall was another one who stayed to advanced age. And thinking of, was it John, they say, who lived to 101? And they would wheel him out in his bed to address the audience, and all he could say was, "My
yeah.
little children love one another." And so, you know,
they brought him in a chair.
yeah. And I was thinking of Arvilla. You know, there are lots of people who are stuck in these homes who are pretty isolated, and this is a way for them, if they can master the technology sufficient to get to get on there, this is a way for them to stay connected with the community and stay alive and engaged. for us
yeah.
as well. It's an inspiring example for us, I think, you know, to stay engaged in that way. I think it makes that period of life much more survivable and meaningful as we move into it, you know.
Well, you know, and just you remind me that there's another person. I so admire people who can stay engaged and active in every way. And Arvilla was certainly like that into her old age, but it also reminds me of Le Ruth Teal, who lived in Hawaii. And Le Ruth had a study group in Hawaii for years and years and years. In fact, our old friend Norman Ingram, that was his first study group. And the person that they told him, he lived on Molokai for years, and they told him to look up Le Ruth when he wrote to the foundation and asked if there were study groups that he could go to. And that was years and years ago. And Le Ruth was so active, and she was a Seventh-day LDS and a practicing
Mormon,
LDS
yeah.
and devout.
Yeah, she
was. And she called me one day, and she said, I want to make movies, you know, and she had sent me a movie she made about Jesus. And she was in her upper 80s at that time. And I said, well, you know, Le Ruth, you do such good work. Have you ever heard of YouTube? And she said, what's YouTube? So I had this great opportunity to explain to her all about YouTube. And I said, Le Ruth, you know, if you have a grandchild or somebody can help you with some of the technical aspects, you can, you know, upload some of your wonderful movies on YouTube. And the next thing you know, Le Ruth is uploading one after another. And you can still find Le Ruth's wonderful YouTube videos by just looking up, if you go to YouTube, Your Ranch and Artist. And she had her own page, and she literally uploaded dozens of wonderful videos. And many of them are, you know, over an hour long. But she had the most wonderful speaking voice, sweet and gentle. Pleasant voice. And so there's another example of you know, youthful spirituality even into the 90s. And I had the opportunity at IC11 when she came to Salt Lake. Of course, she was excited because being a Mormon, she was so excited to come to Salt Lake and excited to know that we were having our conference there. And I told her, I want to be just like you when I grow up. And she thought that she got a kick out of that. But I was so sincere, you know, to be active and engaged even into your 80s and 90s and doing meaningful work. Nothing could be better than that. You know, she was something. So look her up on YouTube. Your Ranchin Artist, all one word. She had her own page. It's never too late to do that kind of thing. And so, with that, my friends, I will say that we are going to study today paper 34, the local universe mother spirit. We're not going to study the whole thing, obviously. We're going to start it. And it'll take a while probably to get through this paper because it's so deep and rich. But Chuck would like to back us up just a little bit to paper 33. And read to us a few sections from that paper before we start paper 34. So, Chuck, I'm going to let you take it from here. You tell us what you got.
Oh, yeah. Well, the paper 33 is titled Administration of the Local Universe. And the first three sections are about Michael Nevedon and his relationship to the universe, local universe mother spirit, and how they work together and how they function in the local universe. And I don't know, there's just a lot of really interesting sort of backstory here that I think will help frame our study of paper 34. I don't know, it's sort of like, this is how it is, and then in 34, we'll see how it got to be like that. So I don't know if that makes sense, just as it put it in those terms. But I think this is really interesting background. That's another way to put it, I guess. For
good precursor.
These two beings. Yeah, these two beings that are so important to us. I mean, the longer we study the book, I don't know if this is true for you guys, but the longer I study the book, the more I think about Michael and the Mother Spirit. You know, I just feel like I'm drawing more and more curious about them. And in that curiosity, also drawing nearer and wanting to really understand these two beings that are so fascinating and so crucial and important. Important's an understatement. But not only are they our literal, you know, creator, mother, and father in Loka Universe terms, but they're also our constant companions, and that's what's kind of so exciting about it, and how that works, how we can engage with them and know them, is I think a big, big part of our, or at least our early, if not our forever, career as ascending personalities from the material sphere. So we're going to kind of see how all that happens, who these two beings are. And I think the more we know them, the more we'll grow to love them. But they are very different. You know, Michael's a first source personality, and the Mother Spirit is a third source personality. So that's a crucial difference. And it has a lot to do with how they emerge as personalities, how they function as personalities, and how we can engage with them, how we approach them. So we learn over time that in some, our approach to the Mother Spirit is a little different from our approach to Michael. So I think it's fascinating to get a little bit of background on that, if you guys are willing.
It's wonderful to read about those personalities of the Loka Universe. We do. I mean,
yes,
because you get
yes,
a sense
absolutely.
When you start the book. Yeah, you're reading about, you know, in the first part, you're reading about the personalities of the Central Universe, but then it comes down to our level, our universe home, and so by the time you get to part two, it's a real personal journey. This is, you know, this is your universe home. These are your universe mother and father.
And they come from, it's pretty awesome. Yeah, and they come from the paradise. You know, they come from the central reality.
Right.
They're not of origin in local universe. They're of origin on paradise, but in each in a different way. So they bring a complemental paradise difference out into the local universe, and the synergy of that complemental relationship that they have is what brings our local universe into existence along with the rest of us. Anyway, I didn't intend to read all this myself. I mean, I could maybe read the first section and pass it on.
Where are we starting in 33?
Right at the beginning of 33, and then just read the first three sections.
Oh, I see.
Michael
okay.
of Nebanon, the Sovereign of Nebanon, and the Universe, Sun, and Spirit. Those are the three sections.
Okay.
I'm hoping we can read. Yeah. So.
Well, let's,
should I dive in?
Yeah, dive right
okay.
in. I read the preamble right, well, in the first section.
Yeah. Okay, I'll do that and pass it on. Okay, so here they start off explaining. While the Universal Father most certainly rules over his vast creation, he functions in a local universe administration through the person of the Creator Son. The Father does not otherwise personally function in the administrative affairs of a local universe. These matters are entrusted to the Creator Son and to the local universe Mother Spirit, and to their manifold children. The plans, policies, and administrative acts of the local universe are formed and executed by this Son, who in conjunction with his Spirit associate delegates executive power to Gabriel and jurisdictional authority to the constellation fathers, system sovereigns, and planetary princes. So that gets us kind of a quick overview of the administrative hierarchy, sort of the org chart, you might say. Okay, so part one here, section one, Michael of Nebanon. Our Creator Son is the personification of the 611,121st original concept of infinite identity of simultaneous origin in the Universal Father and the Eternal Son. So with Mevadon is the, quote, only begotten Son, personalizing this 611,121st universal concept of divinity and infinity. His headquarters is in the threefold mansion of light on Salvington. And this dwelling is so ordered because Michael has experienced the living of all three phases of intelligent creature existence, spiritual, morontial, and material. Because of the name associated with his seventh and final bestowal on Urantia, he is sometimes spoken of as Christ Michael. Our Creator Son is not the Eternal Son, the existential paradise associate of the Universal Father and the Infinite Spirit. Michael of Nebadon is not a member of the Paradise Trinity. Nevertheless, our Master Son possesses in his realm all of the divine attributes and powers that the Eternal Son himself would manifest were he actually to be present on Salvington and functioning in Nebadon. Michael possesses even additional power and authority, for he not only personifies the Eternal Son, but also fully represents and actually embodies the personality presence of the Universal Father to and in this local universe. He even represents the Father-Son, hyphenated. These relationships constitute a Creator-Son, the most powerful, versatile, and influential of divine beings who are capable of direct administration of evolutionary universes and of personality contact with immature creature beings. I think that's a really important comment there to keep in mind as we go forward. Our Creator Son exerts the same spiritual drawing power, spiritual gravity, from the headquarters of the local universe that the Eternal Son of Paradise would exert if he were personally present on Salvington, and more. This universe Son is also the personification of the Universal Father to the universe of Nebadon. Creator Sons are personality centers for the spiritual forces of the Paradise Father Son. Creator Sons are the final power personality vocalizations of the mighty time-space attributes of God the Sevenfold. The Creator Son is the vicegerent personalization of the Universal Father, the divinity coordinate of the Eternal Son, and the creative associate of the Infinite Spirit. Creative associate of the Infinite Spirit. To our universe and all its inhabited worlds, the Sovereign Son is, to all practical intents and purposes, God. He personifies all of the paradise deities which evolving mortals can discerningly comprehend. This Son and his Spirit, meaning the Mother Spirit, this Son and his Spirit associate are your Creator parents. To you, Michael, the Creator Son is the Supreme Personality, and to you, the Eternal Son is super supreme, an infinite deity personality. In the person of the Creator Son, we have a ruler and a divine parent who is just as mighty, efficient, and beneficent as would be the Universal Father and the Eternal Son if both were present on Salvington and engaged in the administration of the affairs of the universe of Nebadon. So we're in good hands.
And we are.
Yeah. So this is the partner of the Mother Spirit that we're reading about here. And when we get to section 3, I mean, we could just read straight through this if you guys want to, so we can get on to paper 34. But in paper 3, in the third section, there's that really interesting part about their, you know, the Jubilee of Jubilees and how they swear eternal fidelity to each other. Yeah.
So which is coming up, by the way, the celebration of the Jubilee of Jubilees.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, I don't know. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, good. I just had a thought. I don't know. It sounds like you want to read a couple more paragraphs, Chuck.
I want to read through section three, if you guys don't mind. Section three will be reading about the Mother Spirit, so that'll lead into paper 34, I think.
Yeah, but just I wanted to sort of tuck in a quick comment here. You know, it's interesting. The book, when they talk about the seminal truths of the gospel, you know, they hold high what it is that we should be holding in our hearts and our minds day in and day out and trying to live, you know, day in and day out of this 2,000 pages of detailed information. And they use this phrase, the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man. And we've all recognized that in our modern day and age, in some senses, that language could use some upstepping because it's too narrow. You know, in a world where male and female are increasingly recognized as vitally important to our understanding of human nature, masculine and feminine, and mothers and fathers, you know, play such equally important roles in family life. And I've always, the phrasing for me that's been more relevant is the spiritual parent-child relationship and the spiritual mm-hmm. sister-brother relationship. And the spiritual parent-child relationship, one of the reasons that's much more helpful for me than the phrase the fatherhood of God, even though there's definite meaning that's particular to the fatherhood of God, the spiritual parent-child relationship for me opens up the possibility of multiple parental child relationships that we have, which is indeed the case in the theology of the Urantia book. And in one place, they describe the universal father as having, we are his grandchildren, which is really interesting that in a sense, the father mm-hmm. is our grandfather. And the Native Americans always, their term for deity, for the ultimate deity, the highest level of deity, is grandfather, which is really interesting. And what it sets up for me, and I've increasingly, for me, this is how I live these relationships and I feel them and experience them, is that we have two sets of parental figures. Each one, there's a mother and a father. So I really relate to my more immediate and intimate mom and dad, really as Jesus, Michael, and our mother spirit, that we are their Urantia children. This is where we grow up in their universe home, and this is where we have our initial experience of spiritual home life is in our local universe where we grow up from embryonic state, you know, to infancy on the mansion worlds and through adolescence and into young adulthood. And then we leave our universe home for the super universe. And so for me, Michael and Mother Spirit are really my immediate mother and father. And the universal father and our mother, the supreme being, I really consider our grandparents as I feel them, as I experience them. So, you know, each of us can do this in different ways. It's a very creative process. But these are living relationships, you know. And I've really come to feel them and experience them as I have four parental figures, primary parental figures. You know, Jesus, Mother Spirit, and the Universal Father, who's the indwelling creator parent of my soul and is making me as I live each day and into eternity. It's an active parenting from the deepest place within. And from the largest place without is our Mother Supreme. You know, when she's the embodiment of our spiritual family in this age. And I feel her presence very much as a maternal presence. And there are some papers, some pages where they describe our differential experience of these parental figures and the Mother Supreme and the Universal Father, etc., all the way through the finality experience and beyond into our service in the other six super universes and by implication into the age of the ultimate and the absolute. So this whole idea of parent-child relationship is much more rich than just a single universal father. It's got variations and qualities to it, and actual people who are our parents in a much more fully developed way. So it's good to keep that in mind, and as we read these passages that you're sharing with us, Chuck, passages.
You know, I like to, sometimes I just like to, in my imagination, go back into the infinite past and think about my father and my father's father and my father's father's father and my father's 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 father and my mother and my mother's mother and my mother's 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 mother. And just the exponential nature, how that explodes out. I think our dear friend Gigi God's Gumshoe said at one point in one of his videos on YouTube, Your Answer Book for Dummies, he said, imagine that you're standing in a stadium and you're right in the middle of the stadium and around you are hundreds of thousands of individuals and they all represent your ancestors. And that's very true, right? I mean, here they all are looking at you, cheering you on, saying, yes, you know, carry the torch, carry it forward.
Yeah.
But then you go back even farther to, you know, their genesis and the genesis of the being that brought them into existence and so on and so forth until you come to the original source, the first great source and center of all things. And if you make that journey in your mind, there's a logical, you know, place that it leads you, and that's to the origin of all things, the first source and center. And that's one of the reasons why the Arantia book appealed to me so much, because there has to be an uncaused cause. There has to be the beginning of it all and the ancestor of it all. And that's, you know, the Trinity. The first family, the original family. Mm-hmm. And so these relationships are so primary. The idea of mother and father, that is so basic to who we are. It's so basic. And it's not such a stretch to imagine that this creation is so much bigger than we ever dreamed. It's not just God and us. That's another thing about the Arantia book that I loved, absolutely loved. This idea of the grand cosmos, this immense creation full of life, teeming with life, and that it's purposeful life, meaningful life, and that all life, you know, has value. Mother and father bring into, you know, being something that has complete value. And so this, the idea that, you know, God as a mother, God as a father, and the way that your Arantia book spells that out, clarifies that, illuminates that, makes that so meaningful and rich in our lives that we can look to the universe and say, yes, my universe is real. My universe home is real. I'm at home in this universe, and I have a mother and father in this universe. And they care for a very, very large universe family. And I'm going to meet all of those relatives in the next life.
Well, I can
imagine them in this life, but I'm going to meet many of them in the next life, the Melchizedeks and the Lenanandeks and angels. All of this wonderful enterprise that's going on. And the Arantia book helps you envision it, imagine it. What a gift that is. You know,
the idea of living
in a friendly and well-ordered universe with loving parents and a loving family.
You know, Paula, there's...
Even if we don't have it here. Sorry, Marvin, go ahead.
No. It's just I so appreciate your sharing that idea of all of our ancestors. They are our family in a very real sense. They're who we came from, and we have part of them in us, in our nature. And but it extends the other way as well. I don't know if you've ever thought about this. I've been thinking about this the last few years. It extends out into the future. For instance, if you think about
the
it, there'll come a time. Well, yeah, there'll come a time when we're, let's say, up on the constellation, right? And we've lived a few million years, literally, right? Maybe. Or somewhere out ahead. Who knows what the actual proportions of time are. But there'll come a time when we'll have a family conclave or a family gathering. And not only will we have the opportunity to visit with our ancestors genetically, but think about all of the progeny, all of our sons and daughters and great-grandchildren, great-great-great-great-grandchildren that are yet unborn that have survived that will, in the meantime, that we will get to visit with, go back and visit with, and get to know. So our sense of family stretches back into the endless past and out ahead into a very large future of unborn children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren that will be able to know and be friends with. So this whole idea of family explodes in multiple dimensions, right? Not only is the original trinity the original paradigm for family relationships, but and all of these celestial sisters and brothers of different orders, but there is our own ancestors and our own progeny that we will have the thrill of getting to know as we proceed as well. So it's just like it happens on so many different levels, this family thing. It's really quite astounding as a conception.
Mm. Well, and so true. Just
well,
so
and,
obviously
and
true.
Mind, yeah. And keeping in mind this comment that our Creator Son is a personification of an original concept of infinite identity.
I know.
And that the Mother Spirit is then going to partner with that through the infinite spirit. So this idea that all of these offspring that you're talking about, including ourselves, we all take origin in this original concept of infinite identity that is the nature of Michael. And that when we read about the Mother Spirit, we're going to see how she matches with that, how she provides the complement to that. And that's also true of this comment. They say that, I just wanted to repeat this, I don't know, this just hit me as being pretty powerful for some reason, where they say the Creator Son is the most powerful, versatile, and influential of all divine beings who are capable of direct administration and of the evolutionary universes and a personality contact with immature creature beings. So we, you know, through Jesus, we have direct contact with this being of infinite identity, who is our, essentially our creator in local universe terms. Mm-hmm. And so that arouses my curiosity in terms of how the Mother Spirit then is going to complement that. What is her role in relation to that function of the Creator Son? I mean, that's a pretty powerful statement. He's the most powerful, versatile, and influential of all divine beings who are capable of personality contact with immature creature beings. So he's the one we look to, you know, boots on the ground-wise, kind of. You know, he's been here. He's been human. But yet he also has this origin in an infinite concept of identity. So that points to a future of unfolding possibilities. And as you guys are saying, the multiplication of these immature creature beings who are going to find their way all the way to paradise. We will, of course, learn to know.
Yeah, but first all the way through this universe.
It's also really provocative, thought-provoking to realize, you know, here I am, here you are, Paula and Chuck and Andre, right? An individual personality, a being, right? But you know, it's really astounding to think about, okay, how am I put together, the different parts of me? You know, the book tells us we have a body, we have a mind, we have the indwelling spirit, and we have the soul, and all of that is arranged and functioning with this identification, unique identification system and identity that is a personality, right? So what does it mean that these beings are my parents? What do they contribute to who I am and what I am, right? So what they tell us is that our personality is what comes from the Father. And also the Father in the indwelling spirit presence is functioning as the functional Father of our emerging soul, you know, growing our souls in a sense. But look at what Michael and Mother Spirit have provided for us that are part of our nature. The very body we live in, the mind structure we're thinking with and expressing and interacting with, are the designed products, our genetics, are all the creations of the Creator Son and our Mother Spirit. So they are parental to us in a very profound sense, and they are raising us up as Maroncha children in their universe home. So it's a parental partnership with these multiple levels of parental deity that is very real and very profound. So much of who we each are is the gift of the Creator Son and the Mother Spirit. It's really only our personality, which is not an only. I mean, it's miraculous. But so much of our nature comes from these local universe parents that we have. So that's very rich. It's a very rich sense of relationship with them.
Incredibly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is important to get a handle on, you know, just the basic differences. And as we read the Mother Spirit paper, we'll understand that how the two complement each other. One is essentially time; the other is essentially space, and how those patterns play out. And in truth, we are all both. We are all both a mother and a father. We are all both, you know, and all three, actually, and a child, right? Each one of us embodies the concepts of all three. So, you know, lest we trip over the language too much and miss the concept, the beautiful concept of mother, the beautiful concept of father, the beautiful concept of child. And creation.
And the beautiful concept of sister and brother, you know.
Yes.
So, I mean, look at what we're experiencing. Yeah, look at what we're experiencing here in this interaction, right? Four of us loving each other, enjoying companionship. That's the sister-brother dimension, the second great, you know, paradigmatic truth of paradise reality, which is the co-equal. And collegial and co-serving relationship.
Right.
What a joy that
the
is.
The intrinsic value. The value of each. You can't.
Yeah.
So I think Chuck wanted to say something. And then, Andre, I want to give you a chance to weigh in. But then do you want to read section 2, Andre?
Yeah, I didn't really have too much to add there.
Oh, okay.
Just the idea that our unfolding realization of identity is always going to be sourced from, there's the paradise sources, but also the our local universe, creator, parent, as you guys have been talking about. So later on in the universe, when we're, maybe on, the sensory universe, going through those worlds or whatever, when we leave the super universe, let's say, maybe the question comes up and you meet somebody. Well, oh, who's your mom and dad? Going to school. Oh, what are your parents doing? And in our case, it'll be Michael of Devadon and his consort. Christ Michael or whatever. So that'll be our mom and dad, and then they'll have their own story they can tell. From their local universe.
Right.
Anyway, it's just kind of funny to think about that way. That we have that lineage, that real relationship. even like somebody was saying, down to the design of our genetics and everything else.
Exactly.
So it's fun to think that we'll carry that with us into eternity. That'll continue to unfold and inform our sense of identity along with the thought of Zestra and paradise identity sources. But our personality will find expression through the increasing realization of our identity sources, which is so exciting to think that they're infinite and eternal and ever more there than we know. You know, there's an unfolding path, a path of unfolding potential always ahead of us.
I love that, the way you characterize that, to unfold and identify, how did you say it? To unfold and inform our sense of identity. That's something to meditate on. You know, what unfolds and informs my sense of identity?
It's sort of akin to our genetic antecedents, you know, that we have our ancestral local universe antecedents that will stamp us, you know, as you say, Chuck, you know, inform us, form our nature all the way when we leave the local universe and proceed up, you know, through
even beyond, super universe,
and even beyond into the finality core and beyond into the next stages, we will always, or the shape of us, in a sense, will always partake of the Nebudon genetic experience, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
That's really
and
sweet,
that family culture.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have that Nebudon family culture that will continue to inform and unfold our identity, and then we merge with the greater reality. Always, we just keep merging with the greater reality.
I think it's particular to our world as well. I mean, I think when we get up to, you know, the super universe level, and they say, "Well, where are you from? You know, who are you?" And you say, "Well, I'm from, you know, Nebudon of Orvonton, I was born and I was formed on Urantia, the nativity sphere of Michael of Nebudon." And people will know, just like, hey, I grew up in New York City, you know, that was my formative environment. Well, it'll be with that degree of particularity that, oh, so your nature is informed by Michael of Nebudon. So I think you're right, Chuck. I mean, I think it's a real profound shaping influence on who we are and where we've been and where we come from. Yeah. That's really, really neat.
And that's the context in which I think to understand. I just want to read this one line from paper 141, which kind of hit me hard the first time I read it. But the more we talk in these terms, the more sense it makes. And this is really short, but this is where I say that Jesus made it plain that he had come to establish personal and eternal relations with men, women, of course, which should forever take precedence over all other human relationships.
Huh.
And, you know, you kind of have to, like, okay, take that in. But in the context of what we're talking about, it makes sense, because this is a very personal and eternal relationship that he's offering to each of us.
Right.
And you don't want anything to stand in the way of that. You know, like all our other relationships have the opportunity to harmonize with that. Or if everybody's doing that, we'll all have that relationship in common, which then becomes such a fertile ground for our relationships with each other.
It's that that keeps us moving forward, right? It's that that draws us into the future. It's that that draws us ever eternally on, that relationship with eternity, that relationship with, as he called himself, the bridge between, you know, time and eternity. He draws
it
us
also,
you know, that's the drawing power.
It draws us closer to each other as well.
Right, absolutely.
As we grow in our realization of that, as, you know, that we have this relationship in common. We have an eternal relationship in common with this deity, this being of paradise origin, which is just so exciting. That's kind of what gives us our, you know, that's kind of the juice or something that brings our relationships alive with each other.
Mark, Andre, are you? Oh, go ahead, Martin. I just want to be sure.
Go ahead, Andre. I want to give, Andre a chance.
There's too much enthusiasm to break in. there's a lot of good conversation. You guys are covering it really well. So I've been reflecting on a lot of things. I don't want to detract from this thread, but one thing that Chuck said, and I think it's important with regard to studying the creative mother spirit, just sort of bringing things back to that a little bit, to allude back to a reference that Chuck made that probably comes from the one place where they talk about the personality of the creative mother spirit. And that's in paper 9, section 8, paragraph 11. And they say, there are numerous types of third source personalities. The infinite spirit bestows third source personality upon numerous groups who are not included in the Father's personality circuit, such as certain of the power directors. And this is the really curious thing, because it's right under this section about third source personality. But look what they say. Likewise, does the infinite spirit treat as personalities numerous groups of beings, such as the creative spirits, who are in a class by themselves in their relations to encircuited creatures of the Father? What a convoluted way to refer to, to speak about the personality of the creative spirit. Well, elsewhere they say that the creator son has always treated the creative mother spirit as a personality, but that it's not obvious, and I'm paraphrasing, it's not obvious to creatures that, the creative mother spirit is a personality until after her elevation, that she becomes more personal in the bestowal of mind and the bestowal of life, but not until she's elevated by the creator son in what our dear friend Diane Lebrecht, our dear sister, and Josh, brother Josh, would say, is the Jubilee of Jubilees, right? When the Creator Son came back from his final seventh bestowal and elevated the Creative Mother Spirit. Then she's recognized and recognizable as a personality. But this is cryptic. This is cryptic because it's almost like saying, is she a third source personality? Is she a first source person? No. Is she in a class by herself in relation to the creatures of the Father? That really caught my eye. And there's very few places. There's only about maybe 6, 7, 8 paragraphs in the Urantia book that refer to and give us anything about third source personality. It's probably largely incomprehensible to us exactly what this is for, at least in our present state. I'm sure we'll be learning about it all the way up. But right now, isn't that curious that our mother, our mom, is so elusive?
Yeah.
But
well,
she's evolving.
The first paragraph of section 3, we could just skip to section 3 of the universe and just read that part before going on to paper 34, if you guys like, just to move things along.
Yeah,
but
maybe
The first sentence in that paragraph, though, speaks pretty directly to what you're talking about in terms of how they describe her in this first paragraph. So maybe we should just go there.
Do you want to read that, Andre?
Sure, yeah, I'll be glad to read this section, sure.
So we're skipping to section 3 now in paper 33,
sure.
Correct?
Right.
Universe,
yeah.
Sun, and Spirit.
Let's do that. So this is where it really talks about the relationship.
Okay. While pervading all the universes of time and space, the infinite spirit functions from the headquarters of each local universe as a specialized focalization, acquiring full personality qualities by the technique of creative cooperation with the Creator Sun. It concerns a local universe. The administrative authority of a Creator Sun is supreme. The infinite spirit, as the divine minister, is wholly cooperative though perfectly coordinate. Let me read that last sentence again, just because, yeah, there's a comma there and a semicolon. Let me try that again. As concerns a local universe, the administrative authority of a Creator Sun is supreme. The infinite spirit, as the divine minister, is wholly cooperative, though perfectly coordinate.
So notice
that's
the language.
Very interesting,
here.
Right? It's almost as though
the divine minister
is pretty much
attached
to the infinite spirit for a while.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they refer to her as a specialized focalization.
Yeah.
And right. And
she got her own number. Here we go.
As the divine minister. What's that? Yeah.
She's got her own
number in the next paragraph,
right?
Yeah,
she's got her own number.
It matches.
Guess whose
number
it matches.
It matches.
But I like what you said there about her. She's almost like an extension of the infinite spirit, whereas Michael is like kind of breaks off and he becomes a personality in his own right.
Yeah,
and
he's not breaks off. He's created as his own personality.
Yeah.
Period.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. He's
unique and original.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
they broke the mold when they made Michael of Nebadon. But
that's what only begotten means, right?
So,
absolutely unique, right?
Whereas the Mother Spirit actually is the Infinite Spirit, sort of, or an extension. That becomes personalized over time.
Right.
Her personality emerges over time, unlike Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So going on, the Universe Mother Spirit of Salvington, the associate of Michael in the control and administration of Nebadon, is of the sixth group of Supreme Spirits, being the 611,121st of that order. She volunteered to accompany Michael on the occasion of his liberation from paradise obligations and has ever since functioned with him in creating and governing his universe. The Master Creator Sun is the personal sovereign of his universe. But in all the details of its management, the Universe Spirit is co-director with the Sun. While the Spirit ever acknowledges the Sun as sovereign and ruler, the Sun always accords the Spirit a coordinate position and equality of authority in all the affairs of the realm. In all his work of love and life bestowal, the Creator Sun is always and ever perfectly sustained and ably assisted by the all-wise and ever-faithful Universe Spirit, and by all of her diversified retinue of angelic personalities. Such a divine minister is in reality the mother of spirits and spirit personalities, the ever-present and all-wise advisor of the Creator Sun, a faithful and true manifestation of the Paradise Infinite Spirit. The Sun functions as a father in his local universe. The Spirit, as mortal creatures would understand, enacts the role of a mother, always assisting the Sun and being everlastingly indispensable to the administration of the universe. In the face of insurrection, only the Sun and his associated sons can function as deliverers. Never can the Spirit undertake to contest rebellion or defend authority. But ever does the Spirit sustain the Son in all of everything he may be required to experience in his efforts to stabilize government and uphold authority on worlds tainted with evil or dominated by sin. Only a son can retrieve the work of their joint creation, but no son could hope for final success without the incessant cooperation of the divine minister and her vast assemblage of spirit helpers, the daughters of God, who so faithfully and valiantly struggle for the welfare of mortal men and the glory of their divine parents. Upon the completion of the Creator Son's seventh and final creature bestowal, the uncertainties of periodic isolation terminate for the divine minister, and the Son's universe helper becomes forever settled in surety and control. It is at the enthronement of the Creator Son as a Master Son, at the Jubilee of Jubilees, that the universe spirit, before the assembled hosts, first makes public and universal acknowledgement of subordination to the Son, pledging fidelity and obedience. This event occurred in Nebadon at the time of Michael's return to Salvington after the Urantian bestowal. Never before this momentous occasion did the universe spirit acknowledge subordination to the universe Son. And not until after this voluntary relinquishment of power and authority by the Spirit could it be truthfully proclaimed of the Son that, quote, all power in heaven and on earth has been committed to his hand. After this pledge of subordination by the Creative Mother Spirit, Michael of Nebadon nobly acknowledged his eternal dependence on his spirit companion, constituting the spirit co-ruler of his universe domains and requiring all their creatures to pledge themselves in loyalty to the spirit as they had to the Son. And there issued and went forth the final proclamation of equality. Though he was the sovereign of this local universe, the Son published to the world the fact of the Spirit's equality with him in all endowments of personality and attributes of divine character. And this becomes the transcendent pattern for the family organization and government of even the lowly creatures of the worlds of space. This is, indeed and in truth, the high ideal of the family and the human institution of voluntary marriage. The Son and the Spirit now preside over the universe much as a father and mother watch over and minister to their family of sons and daughters. It is not altogether out of place to refer to the universe spirit as the creative companion of the Creator Son and to regard the creatures of the realms as their sons and daughters. A grand and glorious family, but one of untold responsibilities and endless watch care. The Son initiates the creation of certain of the universe children, while the Spirit is solely responsible for bringing into existence the numerous orders of Spirit personalities who minister and serve under the direction and guidance of this self-same Mother Spirit. In the creation of other types of universe personalities, both the Son and the Spirit function together. And in no creative act does the one do aught without the counsel and approval of the other.
I'm glad you suggested we read that section, Chuck. That's a great precursor to the Mother Spirit paper. Essential.
Yeah,
really.
we could spend a couple of meetings on that section.
Right. But going back to the very first
paragraph.
How
about just endless watch care? How about just untold responsibilities and endless watch care?
That's basically saying you have no idea how much the Creator Son and Creative Spirit are doing for you all the time in order for you to have your life, you know, let alone to be progressing through the local universe, eventually all the way to Salvington. We have no idea. And that's just the invention scheme.
You know, when we sit back and ask ourselves sort of a related question, and that is, how do we self-conceptualize what we're part of? And related to that, how do we communicate to the world, you know, the heart, the central heart truth or symbolism of this revelation, so that it can be serve as a guiding, you know, as a stable foundation and a guiding star for our emerging culture? You really, when you read a section like this, you really begin to see the grand transition they're trying to usher us into, away from the older symbolisms of kingdom symbolism, and moving us into the new symbolism of family relationships. The implications that flow from this section that are related to the nature of family are so profound in terms of how we relate to each other and what we're part of and how we relate to God, that it's, you know, I'm speechless as to the variability and the glory of that family symbolism that they give to us. And they say, this is what you must march forward with, you know, into the future to build the world that we hope you can build, you know.
Right.
And you read a section like this and you realize this is, when you say paradigmatic, you know, this is paradigm. This is who we are and what we're part of. And when we run with that symbolism, we're speaking to something so deep in human nature that people can relate to it almost immediately, but we have to communicate the ideal of it. But they're yearning for a sense of belonging to something that is this profound and has such profound implications for eternity. You know, we're hungry for that core symbolism of family relationship. It speaks to us at such a deep level because of how we're constituted. Mm-hmm. You know, we're part of this picture. They made us this way, you know, to have these needs for parent-child relationship and sister-brother filial relationship and sororal fraternal relationship. It's built into our very fiber, you know.
We partake
exactly.
We partake of the nature of both of our these parents.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fascinating ways that are hinted at in what we were just reading. Particularly, I'd like to just draw attention one more time to this comment about the mother spirit, that she begins as a specialized focalization of the presence of the infinite spirit. This is from the first paragraph, and then acquires full personality qualities by the technique of creative cooperation with the Creator Son. So it's in that functional relationship that she eventually acquires full personality qualities. She begins as a focalization of the infinite spirit, but then by working with Michael, in relation with Michael, as he achieves sovereignty, she achieves first full personality qualities. So there's this kind of parallel track.
Yeah, good point.
He begins as a full personality. His, you know, as a first source personality, he's a unique personality from the moment of his origin. But the mother spirit achieves full personality qualities by this completely different method of beginning as a focalization of the infinite spirit and then gradually acquiring her full personality qualities by the technique of creative cooperation with the Creator Son. So if you think about ourselves, you know, we're personalities from the moment we're born, but the full expression of our personality qualities grows over time and kind of in a way that's maybe similar to the mother spirit through creative cooperation, let's say with our thought adjuster, something like that. So there's patterns in here of emergence.
Exactly.
That I think are really fascinating to pay attention to.
They're
in terms
fundamental.
Of how they, yeah, maybe playing out.
Those patterns are fundamental for our own unfolding identity and our ability to do what we do with a whole heart. And, you know, Marvin mentioned moving away. We're moving away from tyranny to equality, you know, and the fact that any being ever tyrannized over another is an aberration in the universe. There is no tyranny in the universe, you know.
We're out of step.
When one sex tyrannizes over the other, we are out of step. We are out of step with the universe. They're trying to bring us in step with them. No sex tyrannizes over the other one. And each has a role. One, in the way I love to see it, is time and place or space. The mother is place. The father is time. But that doesn't always have to be, you know, as it plays out on this world, as long as somebody holds the space and someone holds the direction, right? So you know, it's time and place. And mother, to hold the place, to hold the space, you know, you have to be everywhere present or holistic in your methodology. And that's more difficult to achieve. And that's why the cooperation is so important. It's vitally important. And Marvin, you pointed out in our discussion.
Yeah.
Right, incessant cooperation. Because
right.
I'm holding this space, and somebody has to do this. You know, this has to be done. It can't work otherwise. And somebody has to hold the direction and transcendence from the space, and it has to be done. And so it calls for true equality, true cooperation, willing cooperation. And we are so far from that, it's hard for us to envision what they're talking about sometimes. But again, you know, if we go to the ideal concept, then we can get a better grasp on it, I think.
Well, you said so much. And one thing that clicks for me as you've spoken, Paula, and Chuck as well, I mean, this is such an interesting conversation, is in our current era, geopolitically and historically in our world, right, we are in a transition away from what I would call kingdom relationships toward family relationships as the paradigm of who we are in reality and who we are to each other. So what does that mean? What that means is we are moving away from relationships that are patterned primarily by power functions, right? Who has power, which is what is functional in a kingdom, right? You have a monarch, who has absolute power over the serfs or his subjects, right? And they obey, they are obedient, or else they are killed, right? Power relationship. And if that's your understanding of the spiritual foundation of reality, that governs how you feel about yourself and how you know we're all mutually subject to this monarchical power. And that's so fundamentally different from who I am and what I'm part of if I'm part of a family. And the monarchical power-based relationships will not work in our world anymore. It's disastrous. We see the disasters unfolding all around us from that ancient model. We need an understanding of the basic relational dynamics as devoted, family-loving relationship of nurture and compassion, and that we're all in this together. And there's no the head of that whole experience is dominated by love, not power. Yeah, it's such a different understanding.
It is.
And then there's one other thing.
This whole differentiation thing that you're trying to get to and get us to focus on, Chuck, which is so right on target, and the emergence of personality, it's very helpful for me to understand the Mother Spirit when they use the word circuits, that the spirit mm-hmm. always functions as parts of circuitry, which is kind of like the Mother Spirit is an extension of the Infinite Spirit, right? She's an expression of the Infinite Spirit in her early manifestation. She's part of the Infinite Spirit's circuitry out into the universes, and she acts as such, but then increasingly she becomes personal or discrete in her function. Michael starts off as a fully discrete being that is not encircuited. So he sort of sits in isolation in terms of space, right? That's why he can function in time, but he's not spatially everywhere present. The spirit is spatially everywhere Correct. Present because she's part of a circuitry that's joined. You know, it's never separated. So that's really helpful for me to understand is the word mm-hmm. circuitry and how it plays out in all this.
And circuited, yeah. But,
yeah.
I mean, there's all kinds of circuits. And her, that special, one of the qualities of the Infinite Spirit is omnipresence, is this thing about it being everywhere present. And mm-hmm. the same is true of the Mother Spirit within her local universe. So her ministry is everywhere present. And in that, going back to the paper 9 where Andre quoted a minute ago, there's a really interesting but short statement, I think, that sort of characterizes the influence of the third source and center. This is 913. They say, you should think of the third source and center as a universal coordinator, a minister of unlimited cooperation. The conjoint actor is the correlator of all actual reality. So I kind of think of these as sort of the three C's of the Infinite Spirit, which is coordination, cooperation, and correlation. And the correlation part, I think, is where the mind bestowals come into play. So the gift of mind from the local universe Mother Spirit that we receive enable us to have a conscious thinking existence is how we correlate reality. But it also enables us to cooperate and coordinate as well. So
it's like unifying.
Yeah, the three unifying functions I think are fascinating and kind of important to associate with the ministering spirits. So the implication of this comment is this is what the angels are doing too. I mean, as sons of God, whether we're men or women, we kind of have creator responsibilities. You know, we're supposed to make things happen that wouldn't happen otherwise unless we do them, right? But in doing all of that, we need this coordination. We need cooperation. We need to correlate what we're doing with what already exists. So those essential sort of support functions or ministering functions come from the third source and center, through the Mother Spirit, even down through the angels. So we can kind of look to them for help in those three areas, you know, how to coordinate our efforts, how to cooperate better with others, and then how to correlate what we're doing with everything else that's already going on. So
that is good stuff, Chuck. Thank you.
Yeah.
Coordination, cooperation, and correlation.
Well, yeah, on a very simple level, whatever the Creator Son created would never persist were it not for the Mother Spirit correlating, coordinating, and making sure the whole thing functioned well. It would fly apart and disintegrate. So the creative function is really not at all sufficient unto itself. I think I shared with you guys this fascinating conversation. I continue to look for everyday correlates to what we're talking about so that we can kind of put our fingers on it and relate to it more personally. It's just helpful for me to do that. And I think I shared with you guys back several programs ago this conversation I had with this woman that has really stuck with me. She was a close friend, and we would travel together to a common work site. We worked at a local mental health hospital when I was in my 20s. And we were talking, we talked a lot. She was an African-American woman and a really interesting, bright person. And we talked a lot about men and women and their different roles. And we had in our commute, when we would commute to work. And one of the things that has stuck with me is that she said, you know, if it wasn't for men, North America would never have been explored and developed, and mapped out and discovered, explored. And then I made the observation, yeah, but if it wasn't for women, all of the initiation of things that men might have created in North America would never have persisted and been built upon or grown and developed any further. It would have disintegrated. Because it's women that really consolidate and grow and develop things organically.
Right.
And that's been really helpful for me, you know. Men can initiate things, but it's the women that really help them to flower, to blossom, to grow. And those two types of interaction are absolutely critical. I mean, if you don't have creation, then you don't have anything to develop and grow. But if you don't have growth and development, then anything created is just transient. It falls apart. You know, it can't persist. So
yes,
it's
like planting seeds in a garden but never watering it or weeding it.
Exactly.
Or taking care of, you know, it takes both ingenuity and continuity to carry us forward into the future.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
I love that when you shared that with us originally, Marvin, when we were talking about male-female relationships several weeks ago, and it's, you know, it really gives you pause. It both are so instrumental, and that we ever find ourselves at enmity with each other is what's really astonishing. Like, oh, sure, either aspect could carry on alone, without coordination,
exactly.
Cooperation, and correlation. Never going to happen.
So we're getting introduced to this eternal relationship between creator personalities and ministering personalities, and that both are essential to, you know, just like you're saying, anything that's got to be created
for growth, for evolution, for purpose.
I think it's very significant that, you know, when they talk about really the eternal spousal relationship that we will have, it's interesting that they say, you know, our relationships with our human spouses here will persist, and they will be very, very special relationships. However, the relationship that is closest to what we understand as a mother and a father and a family and sort of a spousal relationship that we have through the local super universe onto the finalities and onward is with our angels, our guardian angels. That's the relationship where we will travel together by and large for the majority of our eternal ascent. And that is, again, a pairing of an order of sons and an order of daughters. Isn't that interesting?
It's a complementary
relationship. I find that fascinating, yeah. That we will have this amazing relationship with our angels that will go on, that will be very, very intimate and close all the way along. And it's a pairing of masculine and feminine qualities.
And
anytime you have that, I just want to add what Marvin said. Excuse me, once. Anytime you have that, you have the test for super additive outcomes.
Right.
And that's kind of the key to creation. Anyway. That super
additive. Isn't that in itself the idea that a guardian is actually two angels, one aggressive, one retiring? That in itself is a revelation in the Urantia book that I don't think anyone has ever heard before. You actually have two, and they play those two different roles. You know?
Yeah.
And that
in
should tell us right there how invaluable those two roles are to each other, to the mutual success of the unit, you know?
Well, and look, you know, just to play it a little further, look at this, you know. So here we have, let's say, just pick a man and a woman, like pick me and pick you, or pick Chuck and pick Paula, right? But when you survive, Chuck, you are going to be a son and associated with two spiritual daughters of the mother spirit, but you will be mm-hmm. a son of the male variation, right? Paula mm-hmm. will be a son of the female variation in association with an aggressive and retiring angel. So even there, mm-hmm. there's uniqueness and variability in those kinds of pairings too, mm-hmm. which is more fun, mm-hmm. more fun and interesting stuff. You know, it's endlessly fascinating. Yeah,
and being a female informs my identity.
Of
right,
course.
And it unfolds and informs my identity, and being being a male unfolds and informs mm-hmm. yours,
and it also
informs
our complemental potential.
Right.
Well, and you know, here you are a female
assault. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, here you are, Paula, a female variation of a son of God, right? So there's androgynous combinations, a female variation of a son of God in association with let's say, the aggressive or male variation of a daughter of God as one of your angelic pair. I mean, it's just mm-hmm. endlessly fascinating how variable it is, you know. And creative. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think results in great creative variability as things unfold.
There
you
go. Well, that's a good place to move into paper 34, I think, you guys, because I think we've summed it up, and so much of what we've touched on really is covered in this paper coming up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, Marvin, would you like to start paper 34 for us and then maybe even read section one isn't that long, so yeah, just do them both. And we'll light this candle. Marvin, are you there?
Sorry,
hello?
Sorry. I was muted.
No
Can
worries.
You hear me now? Yeah.
Yes.
yeah, so I was just saying I love this paper. The Local Universe Mother Spirit, paper 34. When a Creator Son is personalized by the Universal Father and the Eternal Son, then does the Infinite Spirit individualize? Interesting, two words, personalize and individualize.
The language
they're
key.
So precise. Yeah. Then does the Infinite Spirit individualize a new and unique representation of himself to accompany to accompany this Creator Son to the realms of space, there to be his companion, first in physical organization and later in creation and ministry to the creatures of the newly projected universe. A creative spirit, I've got to pause and note, look at the difference between the word creator and creative, which they use consistently.
Yeah.
It's very, very
good point.
A creative spirit reacts to both physical and spiritual realities. So does a creator son, and thus are they coordinate and associate, and thus are they coordinate and associate in the administration of a local universe of time and space. These daughter spirits are of the essence of the Infinite Spirit, but they cannot function in the work of physical creation and spiritual ministry simultaneously. They cannot function in the work of physical creation and spiritual ministry simultaneously. In physical creation, the universe sun provides the pattern, while the universe spirit initiates the materialization of physical realities. In physical creation, the universe sun provides the pattern, while the universe spirit initiates the materialization of physical realities. The sun operates in the power designs, but the spirit transforms these energy creations into physical substances. although it is somewhat difficult to portray this early universe presence of the infinite spirit as a person, nevertheless, to the Creator Son, the spirit associate is personal and has always functioned as a distinct individual.
So it's a matter of perception.
It's
a matter of perception. In his perception, the creative spirit has always been a personal and always functioned as a distinct individual, but it's difficult to portray that to us. That's what I understand from that statement.
Well, and also, whereas to other beings, they might have difficulty perceiving as a person, he always has been able to.
Probably because
his very high origin. I mean, he's co-equal. He springs as the she from one or more persons of the Trinity, you know, so that's a very... Different level of nature.
And
so
a different level of
one.
Understanding.
And you can see how their complemental differences are playing out here, especially in this
Right at the beginning. So here's section one. Let's see how long this is. Oh, it's not too long. Personalization. Personalization of the creative spirit. After the completion of the physical organization of a starry and planetary cluster and the establishment of the energy circuits by the superuniverse power centers, subsequent to this preliminary work of creation by the agencies of the Infinite Spirit, operating through and under the direction of his local universe creative focalization. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. So we're talking about the infinite spirit here. I thought we were talking about the creative spirit. Let me read that again. After the completion of the physical organization of a starry and planetary cluster and the establishment of the energy circuits by the super universe power centers, subsequent to this preliminary work of creation by the agencies of the infinite spirit, operating through and under the direction of his local universe creative focalization, be the mother spirit, there goes forth the proclamation of the Michael Sun that life is next to be projected in the newly organized universe. Upon the paradise recognition of this declaration of intention, there occurs a reaction of approval in the paradise trinity, followed by the disappearance in the spiritual shining of the deities of the master spirit in whose super universe this new creation is organizing. So there's a disappearance in the spiritual shining of the deities of the master spirit in whose super universe this new creation is organizing. Yeah, got it. So that's happening
There's a disappearance in the spiritual shining of the deities of the master spirit in whose universe this new creation is organizing. In other words, the seventh master spirit disappears into the spiritual shining of the deities.
Right. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
The spiritual shining of the deities, but within the master spirit in that particular super universe. Yeah.
Right. So the spiritual shining of the deities doesn't disappear. The master spirit disappears into that shining.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys.
It seems like it draws inward.
It's time to diagram this sentence, okay?
Yeah.
I
mean, we're talking about paradise levels of events, right? So, I mean, how much do we really understand of them? They're trying to put
Maybe we should read through the whole thing and then come back to it.
The master spirit for our super universe is the one who is playing the key role in this transformation of the mother spirit.
Okay. So meanwhile, the other master spirits, they go ahead to explain this, obviously. We're mucking around, and then they explain it in the next sentence. Meanwhile, the other master spirits draw near this central lodgment of the paradise deities, and subsequently, when the deity embraced master spirit, the particular one, emerges to the recognition of his fellows, there occurs what is known as a, quote, primary eruption, unquote. This is a tremendous spiritual flash, a phenomenon clearly discernible as far away as the headquarters of the super universe concerned. And simultaneously with this little understood Trinity manifestation, there occurs a marked change in the nature of the creative spirit presence and power of the infinite spirit resident in the local universe concerned. In response
meaning
to these
the
paradise...
Mm-hmm.
There occurs a marked change in the nature of the creative spirit presence and power of the infinite spirit. So it's still sort of almost a part of the infinite spirit
yes.
at that stage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, resident, yes. But it's resident in the local universe that's concerned. In response to these paradise phenomena, there immediately personalizes in the very presence of the Creator Son a new personal representation of the infinite spirit. We're using personal there a number of times, right?
Mm-hmm.
As perceived by the Creator Son. This is, and maybe similar higher beings, this is the divine minister, the individualized creative spirit helper of the Creator Son has become his personal creative associate, the local universe mother spirit. Very interesting. We'll have to come back to that. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, she
from,
emerges.
Sure, sure.
Yeah. From and through. From and through this new personal segregation of the conjoint creator, there proceed the established currents and the ordained circuits of spirit power and spiritual influence destined to pervade all the worlds and beings of that local universe. In reality, this new and personal presence is but a transformation of the pre-existent and less personal associate of the Son in his earlier work of physical universe organization. Okay.
She has been transformed in other words.
Keep going.
Yeah.
Okay. This is the relation of a stupendous drama in a few words. But it represents about all that can be told regarding these momentous transactions. They are instantaneous, inscrutable, and incomprehensible. The secret of the technique and procedure resides in the bosom of the Paradise Trinity. Of only one thing are we certain. The spirit presence in the local universe during the time of purely physical creation or organization was incompletely differentiated from the spirit of the paradise infinite spirit. Whereas after the reappearance of the supervising master spirit from the secret embrace of the gods and following the flash of spiritual energy, the local universe manifestation of the infinite spirit suddenly and completely changes to the personal likeness of that master spirit who was in transmuting liaison with the infinite spirit. Mm-hmm. The local universe mother spirit thus acquires a personal nature tinged by that of the master spirit of the super universe of astronomic jurisdiction. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This personalized presence of the infinite spirit, the creative mother spirit of the local universe, is known in Satania as the divine minister. To all practical intents and spiritual purposes, this manifestation of deity is a divine individual, a spirit person. And she is so recognized and regarded by the Creator Son. It is through this localization and personalization of the third source and center in our local universe could subsequently become so fully subject to the Creator Son that of this Son it was truly said, all power in heaven and on earth has been entrusted to him. Wow. Wow. Wow.
I have to share what Perry said on the board. She said she is born of the womb of the Master Spirit. And that I got that too, Perry, that, you know, that transaction created, the transaction between the Master Spirit and the Infinite Spirit created her, Michael's companion.
Uh-huh.
What
yes,
a transaction.
Yeah.
What a momentous transaction.
The Master Spirit obviously plays a major role in this.
Mm-hmm.
So who are the deities involved in that womb experience? Is it the Trinity? I have to go back and read it. Or is it the seven Master Spirits as functioning as a whole that this one Master Spirit gets sort of embraced and surrounded by? Who are the deity person?
I think it's the Paradise Trinity surrounded by the Master Spirits.
Yeah. Okay.
And the other master spirits
draw near.
Disappears into that group hug.
Into the spirit shining. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And then that
primary eruption that can be seen as far away as the super universe headquarters.
Yeah.
Wow.
And remember,
is that not a
retreat? Yeah. Oh, man, yeah. But remember, what triggered this was the declaration of the intention to create life.
Right.
That's what triggered all
Michael's declaration, the Creator Son's declaration. Yes.
Right. He wants his partner to get pregnant.
That's the initiative. That's the initiative.
Yeah.
The initial, you know.
And then when she's transformed in this way, then she can create life.
Right.
Which is pretty awesome.
What is stupendous?
It says something about the nature of life itself.
Yeah.
Before this happened, there was just a bunch of, you know, planets and asteroids and suns and galaxies and nebulas, whatever. But there was nothing living in their whole domain. It was all matter and energy. So to transform their creative potential in this way that they could now initiate life is a big deal, apparently, judging by this flash.
I have to share with you what Pam on the board, you know, today I got to tell you guys, the board has been an absolute blast, and I'm just loving what you guys are saying. It's really been wonderful. Pam at one point said she's you know, the circuits are coming, the circus, like the circus. And I told her I'm going to run away and join the circuits. We've had a great time on the board today. But Pam says this is all describes the creative mating process, the original pattern. The spirit gives life. The primary eruption is the original semination. Nothing living before it takes the spirit to produce life in all cats. So what a great observation, and it's true. You know, this is the pattern. This is the pattern that we see play out all the way down to our little planet in time and space and mothers and fathers, you know. It's the same pattern. It's not like we come up with something original. This is life reproducing itself, and it's how it happens on high. These stupendous transactions, you know, it just makes perfect sense when you take it in, I think.
So I'm trying to get my arms around, make sure I understand correctly what this in-womb meant, if that's a word, you know, this coming, being embraced into the womb before this flash. Who are the parties engaged in that? And I think we're agreeing that it is the Trinity as a whole. into which the, let's say, you know, let's say in our universe, it would be the seventh master spirit disappears into the shining of the Trinity, and then to the observation of the other master spirits emerges in this eruptive flash, the new creative daughter, if I'm understanding. So the womb is
I think
the
they're telling us it's the infinite
Trinity.
Spirit, though. She's a third source personality, right? So it is from the infinite spirit.
Well, what I get,
spirit.
The particular sentence. I think the particular sentence we're looking at is in the first paragraph that begins upon, right? It says, upon the paradise recognition of this declaration of intention. So who's doing the recognizing here? I would think it's the Trinity. So because the Trinity is who resides on paradise, right? Upon the paradise recognition of this declaration of intention by the Michael Son, right, that's who declares the intention, the recognition is by the Trinity, there occurs a reaction of approval in the Paradise Trinity, followed by the disappearance in the spiritual shining of the deities. I got to think that the disappearance in the spiritual shining, the deities they're speaking of are the Trinity, because that's who they've been talking about.
So you need to differentiate. It is all three in this case, but this is why it says in whose super universe this new creation is organizing. They're trying to universalize this for us.
So they're trying to indicate to us
that in the first super universe, it would only be the deity of the Father. In the fourth super universe, it would be the Father and the Son. In the sixth, the Son and the Spirit. In ours, the Father, Son, and Spirit.
And that's the Master Spirit, right? That is the Master Spirit, the Father,
Master
Son,
spirit
and Spirit of
being,
our super universe.
Which tells you something about how the deities appear. They encircle each other, right? They enshroud each other.
I read this differently.
I know you read it differently.
Go ahead, Mark.
Well, I think you're saying something fairly simple here.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, this is important to understand. Which of these two things is really going on here? You know. So, anyways, let's unpack it and see if we can really get to a consensus on what they're saying here. So the sentence reads, upon the paradise recognition of this declaration of intention by the Michael Son, right? In other words, there's the intention by the Michael Son to create life. The physical organization of local universes happened. The Michael Son says, I'm about to create life. Let's create life. Upon the paradise recognition of this declaration of intention, there occurs a reaction of approval in the paradise Trinity, followed by the disappearance in the spiritual shining of the deities, and I think they're speaking of the Trinity here, of the Master
Read
Spirit
on.
In whose, let me finish, please, of the Master Spirit in whose super, all right, I'm going to read it again. Upon the paradise recognition of this declaration of intention, there occurs a reaction of approval in the paradise Trinity, followed by the disappearance in the spiritual shining of the deities, of the Master Spirit in whose super universe this new creation is organizing. Meaning, let's say, in our Nebulon universe, Master Spirit number 7 disappears into the shining, the spiritual shining of the Trinity. The Master
of
Spirit
our
number Orban 7 disappears.
Universe.
Of our Avantan universe disappears into the spiritual shining of the Trinity. So this occurrence is happening in the womb of the Trinity.
Meanwhile,
the other master spirits draw near this central lodgment of the paradise deities, and subsequently, when the deity-embraced master spirit emerges to the recognition of his fellows, there occurs what is known as a primary eruption. This is a tremendous flash, a phenomenon clearly discernible as far away. So I think we've read what we need to. So I think we're in agreement. The seventh master spirit, the flash emerges from the seventh master spirit, but only after that master spirit is embraced by the Trinity, and something occurs in that place that, for lack of a better term, I would call an impregnation experience. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That the master spirit somehow merges with the Trinity, and then after the master spirit comes out of that embrace into the observance of the other six master spirits, there occurs this eruption that results in the creative mother spirit of that local universe.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've made that point, and it's a very eloquent point, but there is one nuance there.
Mm-hmm.
And that is in the spiritual shining of the deities, plural, which would indicate that just because it's all three does not mean that they're functioning as the Trinity in that case of the master spirit disappearing in there, as would be indicated by any creative mother spirit who was differentiating in any other super universe other than ours. Because what that clause says, spiritual shining of the deities of the master universe, master spirit in whose super universe this new creation is organizing. Well, master spirit number six only pertains to the sun and the spirit. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So in the sixth super universe, that creative spirit would be disappearing in the deities, the combined deities of the Son and Spirit, with the Father standing aside.
Mm. That's an interesting thought, Andre.
Read it.
That's a possibility. That's a possibility. But
it's a clause. It's not just deities of the Master Spirit. It's in whose super universe this new creation is organizing.
Hmm.
Yeah, but that's
why do
that's
they say
parenthetical.
That?
They're describing the particular master spirit. That doesn't mean that all three paradise. That doesn't mean necessarily that less than all three paradise deities of the Trinity are participating in this process. And that's an interesting possibility, but I think it's speculative.
Yeah.
About other super universes. To what master spirit, to what, you know, deities does master spirit number six pertain?
Pertains refers to where that master spirit comes from. And that doesn't necessarily mean that only two persons of deity in master would be involved in that process in master spirit number six. But anyways, we're speculating.
I suggest a study after this study of the mother spirit going to paper 16. Thank you very much. That's my next desire. Okay.
Yeah,
we'll
paper 16 is a good one.
This is why we love studying the Urantia book so much. You know, because you know, it's just. In their difficulty in describing these kinds of momentous endeavors and transactions in time and space and eternity, you know, there's room for lots of speculation. What really matters, though, is that she emerged. Our mother emerged.
This is really...
Well,
this
we need to cut it off. We're down to our last 10 seconds.
We're down. Yeah, we.
Oh
go
yeah,
on
we got to continue this next week,
but not with
the same thing, or we'll lose our audience.
Right. Well,
they don't. They don't
know,
want
and,
this.
And,
so I'm going to call Andre after we're done with the program. I'm going to call Andre, and we're going to have.
Yeah, you guys can hash it out.
I'm going to hash it out.
No, there's a really interesting syntax. It's a syntax.
And I'll tell
there
you
is.
What, we'll
you guys
we'll
can
share
hash
the,
it
we'll,
out.
we'll share the results of our conversation when we get together next week.
It's the battle of the titans. But until then, friends, I just have to get in. Right. Thanks so much for listening, you guys. It was a wonder. We had a wonderful time with you on the board. It was so much fun. Come back next week. Nature of the Divine Minister. We'll talk about who she is.
Until then.
All right.
Guys.
Bye for now.
Love you.
All right. Love you guys.
Bye.
More next week.
Love you guys.
Too.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.